This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new MDX with available real-time traffic monitoring. More information at acura.com.
Join KCRW online today and we'll send you a free gift. Choose the exclusive KCRW iTunes playlist featuring music from the KCRW airwaves or a one-year subscription to Newsweek magazine. You'll also be entered into the Mini Cooper Custom Sweepstakes and today's Daily Sweepstakes. Help support KCRW online. Go to kcrw.com and click on Join.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks, check it out.
This week on The Business, after a lifetime as a character actor, Bill Nighy finally got his breakout role as the squid-faced Davy Jones in the Pirates of the Caribbean sequels. We'll talk to the biggest star you wouldn't recognize. Then, so your lead actor has a drinking problem? An appendix the size of a cheese Danish? Fear not. Cast Insurance is here. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Don't go anywhere. It's The Business from NPR. We start with some good news for TV executives who view the web as an evil siren which leads formerly couch-loving idiot boxers away from their favorite shows. It turns out that U.S. television networks draw a younger, wealthier, and better-educated audience when they run their shows over the Internet, according to a new study released by Nielsen and Scarborough Research. The timing couldn't be better, as hit shows like Grey's Anatomy and Heroes become available for viewing through your computer. Networks had been fretting that allowing consumers to view those golden geese over the web would kill off the number of people watching them on TV. To the contrary, it's expanding total viewership, attracting people who otherwise would never have watched. Like people with lives. In international TV news, the Dutch company Two Way Traffic has secured the rights to develop a Mandarin version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for broadcast in mainland China. A Chinese company called Chinese Media Power will produce the program. Per the Chinese government, contestants will play for charity rather than themselves, and the show must be, quote, inspiring and moral, unquote. A sample question? Chairman Mao was A, the greatest teacher, B, the greatest leader, C, the greatest commander, or D, the greatest helmsman. Speaking of rolling in dough, the former treasurer of NBC Universal was indicted on two counts of wire fraud last week. Authorities charged that 34-year-old Victor Jung of New York stole more than 800,000 large from the company and used the proceeds for lavish private jet trips and a summer house rental in the Hamptons. According to the indictment, Jung and fellow private jetters enjoyed, quote, shrimp cocktail, Veuve Clicquot champagne, Grey Goose vodka, and Mondavi wine, unquote. In a statement, NBC Universal president Jeff Zucker remarked that, quote, we could have overlooked the fraud, but Mondavi? Finally, the Sundance quote of the week comes from the mouths of Moppets. Christian pressure groups called for a ban of Deborah Campmeyer's Sundance movie Hound Dog because of a scene in which the character played by a 12-year-old Dakota Fanning is raped. The groups claim that no child should be put through something so horrible, even for art or a big paycheck. Fanning responded to the hysteria with these words, wise beyond her years. Quote, it's not really happening. It's a movie, and it's called acting. I'm not going through anything. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up, so you think your car insurance premiums are high? Wait till you hear about cast insurance. But next, an English star makes a splash on this side of the pond. Bill Nighy has been the curmudgeonly and slightly eccentric star of English movies and television for three decades. In 2003, he's shown as an aging rocker in the romantic comedy Love Actually, and his star quickly began to rise on this side of the pond. This year, you might have seen him as the cuckolded husband in the Oscar-nominated Notes on a Scandal. What you may not know is that he played the bad guy in the year's highest-grossing film.
You owe me your soul, and it's time to pay up.
That's Bill Nighy hidden under the digitally generated squid face of Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Man's Chest. Bill Nighy, welcome to The Business.
Thank you.
So first of all, we should congratulate you on your Golden Globes win, or I should say wins, because you've won two in the last 2 years.
Well, thank you.
And I want to ask you, is it American cultural imperial arrogance, or have you suddenly blown up?
It's difficult to tell. I'm not really sure. I think I've been around, obviously, but lately, yeah, my American experience is recent, and I seem to have been discovered at a late stage of the game.
Yeah, it is a little unusual for people to explode at 57. I mean, it's a very distinguished 57. But,
yeah, it's quite.
Tell me about how that has changed your experience. How have the meetings changed? Did you have a Hollywood agent to begin with?
Things have changed in the last, I don't know, in the last 10 years, things have kind of just slowly developed in American terms. I have an American agent now. I didn't used to. It wasn't necessary, obviously. Love Actually, a film I made, which Richard Curtis wrote and directed, which I would argue that probably more people saw me in that than have seen me in everything else I've ever done, made a big difference, and that raised my profile in America, although a lot of people thought that I was some ancient exasperated rocker that they'd found, you know, in a booth somewhere. They didn't think I was an actor.
Right. How did the offers change and the meetings change?
Well, I don't have to sing for my supper anymore. I don't have to do any auditions, which is a big, big thing. Any actor will tell you. I spent my whole life sweating in hallways, so I don't have to do that anymore, which is such a big deal. Meetings have changed in as much as that people are generally trying to persuade me to do things rather than the other way around, and I could really get used to it. Mm-hmm. May it never change.
Your biggest role to date, you know, you're sort of the biggest box office success, really, of the year and of your career. You had an octopus on your face.
Yes, exactly. I'm the squid. The squid is huge. The squid is bigger than I'll ever be. But the squid also makes more money than I've ever made, which is very, very, it makes me very happy.
I mean, given that massive amount of exposure, the fact that you had to do it sort of, you know, covered in latex and CGI, did it frustrate you, or was the reaction of Hollywood, you know, imagine what he can do without the squid on his face?
Well, it seems to have worked out. It doesn't. There were times when I thought, you know, what am I doing? Am I insane? Because I, you know, you don't have to wear the squid face. You have to wear even arguably more embarrassingly, you have to wear grey computer pajamas with white bubbles all over, a skull cap with a bubble on top, and white spots all over your face, and trainers with bubbles on the trainers, and you look like somebody who didn't make it into Devo or something. For those of you who are old enough to remember,
some sort
Devo.
Of Hasidic speed skater.
Yeah, exactly. That's very good. And so, you know, it was for the first couple of weeks. They ran out of jokes on about the third day, thank God. But it's bad enough standing next to Johnny Depp on a good day without you looking like Andy Pandy. But so there were times when I despaired, but I used to say my fee over and over and over and over and over and over in my mind, because that was all I had left. There was no dignity involved, so I just stuck to the money. But it was great, and it was irresistible because the script was great, and you got to hang out in the Caribbean with Johnny Depp, who's an extremely nice man. And we had a lot of fun.
I wonder if you're introspective at all about the phases, so to speak, that actors' careers seem to have, that if you've given thought or are reluctant to. I'm thinking, you know, a few years ago I was talking, I think it was Kathleen Turner, and she said, you know, you can be the hot girl, you can be the DA, or you can be the grandmother. And that for women, those are very limited spheres. And if you wind up on the cusp of them, you wind up not working for a while, and then suddenly you sort of fall into that demographic again, and you start working again. That seems to be less the case for men, but I'm wondering, do you share that assessment, and what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, I recognize that as a kind of a traditional progress for women. And there are similar things for men, I think. I've been lucky. I mean, I joke that I've reached that difficult age where I can only portray men from other dimensions, having played a zombie, a vampire, and now a squid. So that genre market is available to me, so I live in hope. Mm-hmm. As for if you're playing regular human beings, which I do get to play occasionally, then there is, you have to be, you know, you have to, have, you know, I started having children 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I started being somebody's dad. And I don't expect to get the girl anytime soon. But, you know, there's work around, and and I'm happy to play the kind of parts that have been made available to me. I've been very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to do that you can now do in terms of work? I mean, you can get off the ground that you've always wanted to, whether it's, you know,
well,
some weird Ibsen play or, you know.
No, I've got nothing in that. I've got nothing in that area. I'm doing a play at the moment, the Vertical Hour with Julianne Moore, the David Hare play on Broadway, which, you know, so I've played Broadway. I'm kind of in the movies. I've done many things in the theatre back home. I've done, you know, television things. There isn't anything that I, you know, there's nothing left for me to want, really, except to continue to do work that makes me feel, you know, good about myself and that doesn't make me a nuisance around the place, and which is hopefully funny. I prefer it when it's funny. I think it's of more use.
Bill Nighy, winner of this year's Golden Globe for Best Performance by an Actor in a Miniseries or Motion Picture Made for Television. That's quite a mouthful. And will be seen throughout the world in Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, coming to a theater near you this year, summer, right, Bill?
Yeah, well, a little earlier than that. I think Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, that's sort of the Hollywood speak for summer.
Oh, right, sorry. I thought that was spring. Shows what
and,
I know.
Well, yeah, I know. It's all semiotics, I guess, at this point. But anyway, Bill Nighy, thanks for being on The Business.
Pleasure.
If Bill Nighy were to come down with something worse than seasickness during the shooting of the next Pirates movies, God forbid, it could shut down the production and cost the studio millions. That's why above-the-line players in most movies have cast insurance. To be insured, actors and other key members of the crew are evaluated by a physician, and the insurance premium is determined by the results. A star who's labeled a high risk can cost hundreds of thousands in insurance premiums. In extreme cases, think of Robert Downey Jr.'s battles with drugs and alcohol, an actor can become, at least temporarily, uninsurable. And uninsurable means unhirable. Recently, there have been a number of big stars in the news who've been rushing headlong towards uninsurability. Lindsay Lohan. Excuse me. To find out more about the vital role that cast insurance plays in movie making and the careers of actors, we have Kent Hamilton, Executive VP of Truman Van Dyke. They've been insuring indie films since there's been a film industry. Kent Hamilton, welcome to The Business.
Thank you. Hi.
So what sort of things make it too expensive to insure someone?
Most of it is health issues. If there's a pre-existing condition, those things are normally excluded. And when bond companies and financiers get involved, they want these members of the cast that are insured to be clear, not to have any exclusions on them. Suppose somebody has a heart operation 2 months ago, and when they go through, of course, on their cast physical, that's going to come out. And the insurance company is going to exclude any pre-existing condition for the most part. And so that makes it hard. There's another issue that's called a stop date problem. The insurance company usually requires about 10 to 14 days after a shoot that the actor be available in case there needs to be a reshoot. You know, there's a loss on the negative or the processing of the film, or an actor goes down, or that actor goes down. And sometimes actors go from one film to the other very quickly, and they don't have enough time right after the production in order to, you know, to fulfill what's necessary should a claim occur.
Yeah, I mean, if it turns out the new ending is testing horribly and we got to find a different way to step out of this movie, and our leading lady is off in Antarctica for the next 6 months, we have a problem, right?
Right, because the insurance company wants to minimize the loss. So if they're going to have to do a reshoot, they want to make it continuous. They don't want to stop the production. And then while everything's all set up, the cameras are all there, and then wait 2 months, it's much more expensive to, you know, to film later than just keep everything rolling that's already in motion.
You mentioned health issues as a big reason why it becomes too expensive to insure someone, and you mentioned that there are length of days issues, that if someone's about to be whisked off to Tanzania or Antarctica for the next movie. But in between there are sort of softer, I would think, much harder to quantify risks. I mean, is there a way to quantify the risk of someone who, you know, has been in rehab or probably should be?
Well, if you're talking specifically about drugs, there's questions on that cast physical related to drugs and related to alcohol. And the interview from the physician specifically, you know, approaches those questions. And if there's a pre-existing condition, that usually comes out on the application or in discussion. And yes, that can be a pre-existing condition. I've had to insure in my career some people that have had terrible drug and alcohol problems, and that can get very difficult and very expensive.
How do you do it? I mean, are these stars peeing in cups?
Yes, yes. In some situations, for an example, I once had an actor that no one would employ, and I talked an insurance company into, you know, doing cast insurance on him after interviewing himself and his father. And we set up they paid for a drug counselor from a rehabilitation center to be with him 24 hours a day. And every day we had to read, the pee in his cup to make sure he was okay and drug-free. And he did complete the movie, thank God. And everything worked out. And, you know, it's funny. If that actor still sees me to this day and he's being interviewed by, you know, somebody, he stops everything and comes over and hugs me, you know.
You saved his life.
Well, I saved his career. I mean, I was just trying to do my job, but he couldn't get a job before that.
Is this stuff on my permanent record?
There's no permanent record per se. Now, if that individual has a bad reputation, say, for drugs or something, and, you know, it's common knowledge or it comes out on the cast physical, they may have to have him do a urinalysis or a special drug screen. Sometimes the actor himself will stand for the loss with his salary. I mean, there's various ways that all this is negotiated to get the movie complete. Now, remember, having an insurance claim is not what a producer wants. It's very difficult, once you have a claim, to go through all of this and, you know, supply all the lost receipts and shut down and redo everything. It's difficult and it's expensive. So often the producers watch these people, and usually the professional will respond accordingly. They know that a lot of people, a lot of things are dependent on them, and for the most part, most of the pros are, you know, there every day no matter what. I've seen actors, famous actors, that got hurt in an automobile accident or on a motorcycle that heroically performed when they didn't have to. They were hurt, and they got up, and they performed because that was their job.
Mm-hmm. Speaking real quickly of motorcycles, can you demand independent? We were on drugs for a long time here. Let's move on to other risky behaviors. Mm-hmm. If I have a predilection for hang gliding or riding my Ducati at 110 miles an hour, can you tell me I can't do that? Can you tell Steve McQueen he can't drive a race car during his off hours?
Sure. One of the things in cast insurance is there not be dangerous activity. There's no coverage for that.
Mm-hmm.
It specifically excludes it. And there's an exclusion, too, for flying your own plane. So sometimes these fellows that fly their own plane have to get special. They have to, you know, prove their license and their hours. And then somebody may have to pay extra premium so that they can fly their plane. But these things have to be worked out.
Mm-hmm. If I go seek treatment, does it get cheaper to insure me over the long haul?
Well, you know, if you do have a problem and you're continually, and you know, you can work out of your problem. It's not easy. You may have extra premium. You may have to be insured on a separate policy. But you may have to provide your personal doctor's letters, you know, talking about how your treatment has been successful. But you can. Work out of these problems is at some point. Some of them, you know, like some of the drug problems can be worked through out of after years and years and, you know, of not having a problem. Then you get a good reputation and, you know, your reputation goes away or, mm-hmm. you know, they're able to deal with that.
Sort of like a bankruptcy. After 7 years, it's like it never happened.
Well, yeah, and it's just how, and is the person still on treatment? Is he still sober? Is he, you know,
right.
What's he been doing? Has he had problems on other films? There's an actor I'm insured a lot who nobody would, another one that nobody would insure at all. And, you know, he worked through his problem, and after movie after movie or movie, now he's not surcharged like he was because he doesn't have the problems that he did.
Ken Hamilton is Executive Vice President for Truman Van Dyke, the guys who make the movies possible. Ken, thanks for being on The Business.
Oh, thank you very much.
Coming up after a short break, Alan Arkin gets the Oscar nod. You're listening to The Business from NPR. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. In 1967, Alan Arkin was nominated for the Best Actor Oscar for his very first feature film, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. Now, 40 years later, he's been nominated for an Oscar again, this time for Best Supporting Actor for his role in Little Miss Sunshine. We thought we'd revisit part of our incredibly prescient conversation with Arkin from October, well before the nominations were announced. I'm interested in how Oscar buzz or an Oscar nomination or, please God, an Oscar win for you.
Is it going to change my life?
It's going to change your career. And,
I haven't gotten,
and might it allow you to do things you haven't gotten to do yet? That you,
like what?
I don't know. That's for you to tell.
What haven't I gotten to do yet? Could I play the young Beethoven? I don't have a lot of aspirations anymore, to tell you the truth. I don't know what they're going to I don't know what they can possibly offer me now that I haven't.
More dough?
More dough would be good. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
For a couple of movies. But my greatest aspiration, I scream at my agents and my managers, I want to be in front of a blue screen and I want to be saying, look out for the thing, it's coming. No foreign languages anymore. I don't want any long speeches anymore.
No soliloquies. No.
I don't want to kill myself anymore. I want to, like, to paraphrase one of my heroes, Jean Renoir, who said for many, many years, he says, I had a great message to give the world. He says, now I just want to send people my love. And that was somewhere around halfway through his career. He realized nobody was getting the message anyway. He'd do great movies and people would pick at the theaters. Until 20 years later when they realized they were masterpieces.
No, but you're not just sort of retiring to some pleasure dome here. I mean, my understanding, and you can...
I can't afford a pleasure dome.
I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and you're listening to The Business. Alan Arkin's been in show business for 50-plus years, but his real passion these days are creativity workshops. Born out of his own desire for self-improvement, Arkin uses the improv techniques he developed during his Second City days to help people get to a place of creative honesty and emotional openness. Alas, this is a show about the business of show business, so somewhat against his will, I dragged him back to the pedestrian subject of managers and agents.
Well, I got off the phone with my manager, Estelle Lasher, about half an hour ago, and I told her I feel incredibly fortunate because I feel like everybody who is working with me now is absolutely trustworthy and in my corner, and I feel totally safe, maybe for the first time in my life. I love my agent, I love my manager, and I love my lawyer. And I feel safe so that I can go about my business and not concern my I'm in a position where I feel like I don't have to concern myself with the business. I go about living my life, and I let them take care of the things that they know how to do. And
what happened in the past that made you feel otherwise, unsafe?
It's basically I didn't know what they were doing.
Didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, uh-huh. I felt like I've been with a couple of people over the years who would revel in telling me stories of how they tricked people into doing certain things, and I would laugh, thinking how great my representation was. And then one day I woke up and I said, "Hey, wait a minute! If they're doing that, if they're playing mind games with other people and tricking people into thinking things are going on and they're not, what's to say that they're not doing that with me?"
I'm interested in how long you were with these people. I mean, how long did it take you to?
Well, I never lived in Hollywood since I was in my teens, and it's something I never paid any attention. And it's one of the reasons I gave up directing. I spent a lot of time. I directed a film. I got spectacular reviews for it, and then I tried to get another movie organized and realized it took several years of my life. Years of my life went into getting a couple of projects done.
This is in 93 or?
Before that. Right. I spent 20 years trying to get this one film done that was an absolute labor of love of mine. I loved everything about this movie. I would have done it free. I was in a place – I had the money five times. Three times I gave it up because I found out where the money came from. I didn't want to have anything to do with those people. And
was it like arms dealers or what?
Yes, like in that area.
Right.
And then there was
– I was kidding.
No, but I'm – yeah. Yeah. Walked into some guy's office and there's pornographic films on the wall. I said, thanks a lot. I don't care what your aspirations are with this film. It's not going to come out the way I want it. And then I finally said, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be a businessman. I don't want to be a producer. I want to act and I want to direct. And if it means spending 6 years of my life, 5 years of my life, getting stuff organized to direct something for 3 months, I'm not a director. I'm just like a part-time director. I'm a businessman the rest of the time. I didn't want to do it, so I gave it up. And I'm a lot happier for it. So you, what you want to talk about is something I know nothing about and don't even really want to know that much about.
Let's talk about something. On the movies that you worked on, I mean, I think you were quoted as saying about Little Miss Sunshine that you had no idea this movie would be anything.
No, that's not exactly true. You mean commercially?
Commercially, yeah.
Whoever knows? Nobody ever knows anything about that. I mean, if they did, everything would be a hit. I knew the script was sensational when I read it. Mm-hmm. That I had no question about. I had misgivings about the directors because they never – number one, there were a lot of red flags. They had never directed a film before. That's
they were from the commercial world, yeah.
Yeah. Number two, it was a husband and wife. It was two people who were going to direct the film. This is a second red flag. Number three, they're married. There's a big third red flag. And within 2 days of shooting, it was clear that all the anxieties were unfounded, that they were just wonderful.
Are there movies that you thought would be something and weren't?
Oh, God, yeah. There's a whole period. Well, I got what I've learned to do in the past, I guess, 15 years was something I think everybody should do. Every actor should do when they get hired for film is I will not make a movie now unless I have a long talk with the director beforehand and find out what their vision of the movie is and whether our visions coincide or whether his visions is more exciting than mine. It's fine. I'm willing to go along with somebody else's vision as long as I get excited by it and feel like it's something I can jump into. But I like to present my absolute most arbitrary worst side before the movie starts so that we know exactly where we stand. There's no surprises.
It can only get better from there.
Yeah. I got fired from a movie once in my career. I don't even mind talking about it if you want to hear about it.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It was on the funny thing was I got canned from Bonfire of the Vanities.
It's a good movie to get canned from the way it turned out.
Yeah, and it turned out I was the only one who got good reviews as a result of that. I kept getting mentioned in the fact that I was wise not to be in. They didn't want me to begin with. But I read the part and I said, that's my part. Once every 50 years or so, you get a part, you read a script and you say, this is my part. I knew that was my part. So I did. I said, I'm going to send in a tape doing the entire part and have them and all get hired, which is exactly what happened. I did the whole part on tape. They saw the tape, hired me, and then the next week fired me because of creative differences, according to the newspapers.
How often have you done that? That's amazing.
I never did it before or since, but I knew it was my part.
Mm-hmm.
And Morgan Freeman knew it was his
part. What do you think of his part?
I didn't think he did it. I think he's a wonderful actor, but I didn't think he got any juice out of it.
We've been talking with Alan Arkin, director, producer, actor, Broadway guy.
Grandfather.
Alan Arkin, thanks for being on The Business.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you.
And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Burdesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business. You've been listening to KCRW's The Business. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Treatment, a weekly conversation with some of the most influential and innovative people in movies and popular entertainment, hosted by film critic Elvis Mitchell. Check out the podcast of The Treatment at kcrw.com.